In our audience are a number of friends of Mr. Deke and of mine, people who have been following these developments for a number of years. In the case of Mr. Deke, a Hungarian who studied in Switzerland, where he received his PhD in international finance from the department in various parts of the world. He was discharged in 1946 with the rank of major. Mr. Deke has been recently elected president of the veterans of the OSS. And since 1946, he's built up a network of what is today the largest and oldest foreign exchange operation in the United States, with offices in Canada, the Far East, and Europe. The organization under his control has 50 offices in the United States and abroad. Mr. Deke is also president of Deke International Bank in Fleischmann's, New York, and his organization has controlling interest in Swiss and Austrian banks. He is a member of the faculty of the Banking School of the American Bankers Association and chairman of their International Commercial Lending Committee. He is active and a member of the Committee for Monetary Research and Education. And it gives me great pleasure then to introduce Mr. Nicholas Deke.
Thank you, John. Looking over you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm almost speechless. I'm especially impressed by the great number of ladies attending this seminar. And I disagree fully with Harry Schulz, who called you or addressed you, gentlemen and ladies. I have been facing various groups, and a very small percentage of that group consisted of ladies. That you ladies are here today in such large numbers is an indication of your superior intelligence. So let me address you, ladies and gentlemen. All my life, I have been accustomed to be part of a minority group. Coming out of little Hungary, wherever I went, I was in minority. Here, I feel being with the majority, and it's a very comfortable feeling. But when you go out and you leave this place and face the world, you feel and felt in the past and you will feel in the near future being a minority. Because unfortunately, the majority of the world, the majority of the people in the United States don't think the same way as you do, as we do. I'd like to present you with some practical problems, some practical aspect of our day-to-day life. As you know, there's a regulation in this country that if you leave the country or you come back and you have more than $5,000 on you in money or in negotiable instruments, you have to declare. That's a Treasury regulation. Recently, the Treasury ruled that Kruger rands are money. And if you leave the country with Kruger rands worth $5,000 or more, or come in with Kruger rands on you, you have to declare it because it is money. It is money because the South African government looks upon Kruger rands as legal tender. Now the question is, a Kruger rand is money at what value? And the Treasury ruled that it is money at its monetary value, which is based on the $42.22 gold. The interesting thing is that this does not apply to other gold coins. You know probably that Panama and the Bahamas brought out through Franklin Mint some gold coins which they declared legal tender, but the Treasury doesn't recognize them as legal tender because they are not in circulation in those countries. That means that the Treasury looks upon the Kruger rands as being in circulation in South Africa, which is not quite so. Now, if the Treasury rules that Kruger Rand is money, then we should not pay sales tax, state or city tax, on Kruger Rand, because it is money. When you exchange money, you are not subject to tax. In our offices, we sell foreign currencies and foreign coins, presently in circulation in foreign countries. They are tax-free. Either the Treasury is wrong, or the states are wrong. And I respectfully submit to this committee of National Committee for Monetary Reform to add to its program an effort to induce the federal and state governments to lift tax on all gold and silver coins and on precious metals. And I'm urging the governing body of the committee to take that up at their next meeting and fight for it. Because as it is now, it is only confusion. It discourages a great segment of the population of the United States from buying gold coins or silver coins or gold bars because they are subjected to tax. They compel us to circumvent that tax by buying in a different state or by out of city in order to save the tax and make shipments the roundabout way. And that is not right. If we buy gold coins in Switzerland, we receive them and pay no tax. If we buy gold coins at our friends or banks locally, we have to pay tax. And I hope, Jim Blanchard, that you will be successful in bringing this effort to happy conclusion. I'm going to raise a few questions. Why we should own gold, why we should believe in gold, or why we should not believe in gold. People say that gold fluctuates heavily. I believe that gold is one of the few or maybe only commodity which has fluctuated less than other commodities and certainly less than securities. It is not true that gold is a heavily fluctuating commodity. Only people will tell you that who are not familiar with gold or with commodity or with finance. Gold has been going up and up with slight fluctuations compared to other commodities. Some people say, why should I buy gold when any time the US Treasury or other central banks might sell their gold? And they are right. We have been exposed to that in January. And what happened? Instead of the American public buying gold at a reasonable price, it was the German bank who bought up probably the majority of the gold at below the market price. On that particular day, I received a telephone call from Switzerland asking me, is it true that the Treasury sold gold under the market price? I said, it is true. So why didn't you tell them to call us on the telephone? We would have bought them at the market price. It is not conceivable that the US Treasury, or as a matter of fact, any government, will sell gold from their stock in any quantity which might affect the gold price of the world. They will not do that because they will not debase their own wealth. How important gold is for the governments shows the fact that still in 75 countries, that maybe 90 countries are countries which count, and I don't want to offend the other 30 countries. 75 countries of the 90 countries have prohibition of gold. Now, why would they have prohibition of God if God is unimportant? The United States joined only recently the 14 countries which permit free ownership of gold. Russia, and I believe China, punishes by death those who own gold. It must be tremendously important, a very important metal. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Under such circumstances, why should any government throw gold on the market with the purpose to debase the price? People say gold is no good because it has no yield, and that is wrong. Gold has more yield than any reasonable other investment. How come? If you bought gold 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and you would have sold every year 10% of your holding, your capital still would have increased and you would have had the income. Of course, you could say, well, but what would have happened if I would have bought gold 30 years ago? There was no reason to buy gold 30 years ago because the US government was on record that they will sell gold through London at $35 an ounce. Why should you then invest in gold with no yield as long as you knew that you can get gold anytime? It became interesting to buy gold when the United States pulled out of the gold pool, or when the United States closed the gold window, and we knew that there's a problem. Other remarks about gold is that the production of gold is mainly in the hand of South Africa and Russia, and that is true. Two faraway countries. But so what? Tin is in the hand of also a handful of countries. So is copper, and so is rubber, and other commodities. We know that the production of South Africa is decreasing from year to year in the last 5 years. We have indication also that the production of Russia is increasing. You know that the United States is on the fourth place as far as production is concerned. Some people say, the hell with gold or any other precious metal or any backing for the currency, because our capacity to produce agricultural products and feed the world, our industrial capacity is such that we don't need any backing for our money. Well, that is not true. No matter how big is our industrial capacity, our agricultural capacity, our economy is based on money. If money fades away, our economy will collapse. People say that a great percentage of the production of gold was used for jewelry, which is true. And now that gold became very expensive, less gold is used for jewelry, and the take-up of the production has been decreased. There is some truth to it, especially since gold became more expensive than platinum. More platinum will go into jewelry, and less gold will go into jewelry. But that segment of the production, which doesn't go into jewelry anymore, will go into coins and into hoarding, and it has been happening just so. Also, we have to take into consideration the recovery, the scrap gold, which will be more extensive now that the price is high. That is true. On the other hand, the labor costs also more. We expect greater degree of scrap recovery than in the past, but it will not affect the gold market. Some people say that how come that in Germany during the inflation, people didn't buy gold? There's a good reason. People did not buy gold in Germany during the inflation in the 1920s because they bought something else. instead of gold. They bought U.S. dollar banknotes. Why did they buy U.S. dollar banknotes and not gold? Because the U.S. dollar banknote was readily convertible into gold. Why should they bother to buy gold when they could buy U.S. dollar banknotes and hold the banknotes? It was more practical. You heard many times probably what happened in Germany in 1920s, but I'd like to read to you just one paragraph. The dollar then, firmly anchored on gold standard, was worth 575 marks in the late summer of 1922. It was worth 1.65 billion marks on August 8, 1923, 1 year later. On August 9, the next day, it took 3.3 billion marks to buy a dollar. And by November 15, 1924, at the peak, the dollar was fixed at 4.2 trillion, which is 4,200 billion for $1. And that is why they did not buy gold, because the dollar was as good as gold. And I must say, in the last 10 years, I didn't hear that expression. Let me give you some good reason why you should own gold. As it is now, with the present knowledge of gold mining, the gold resources of the world will be exhausted for mining purposes in 25 years. As paper money is printed, as inflation continues, and unfortunately I am convinced that it will continue, the paper money will lose value, hence the gold has to go up in relation to our paper money. Production of gold will become more expensive. The scarcity of gold gives gold a special value. Past experience in inflationary time shows us that gold survived. People say that it's dangerous to hold or buy gold because of counterfeit and forgeries. Not quite so. If you buy bullion-type gold coins, they are not counterfeit, they are not forged, it doesn't pay, because the premium you pay over gold content is small. If you buy small bars, there might be a danger. And the Deke Pereira Group, our group, introduced a special system to protect ourselves. We sell the gold coins, the bullion-type gold coins, and the small bars, the quarter, half, 1 inch, 1 ounce, and 5 ounce, and 10 ounce bars, in a specially heat-sealed package with a guarantee slip sealed into the plastic, with the guarantee that we will rebuy them without re-assaying them, as long as the plastic is not broken. That is how they look. At least, John, I know that you know the value of gold. I want to say a few words about the banks in the United States. Now, I'm the president of a bank, and I heard some nasty remarks about banks. And I was embarrassed. I didn't know whether I should be upset or I should be pleased. Well, I am neither. I want to clarify a misconception. People think that after January 1st, the gold sales in the United States were disappointing. In a sector, it was. In a other sector, it surpassed every expectation. The four commodity exchanges in the United States, dealing in gold futures, starting January 1st, they took off with a bang. It never in the history of commodity trading in the United States, a new commodity started to trade in such volume and such intensity as gold. In the first 2 months, $2.5 billion worth of gold have been traded at the four exchanges in the United States. Now we know that the great majority of these contracts will never be delivered, because people enter in gold contract for hedging, for speculation, and whatnot. But the experience has shown that about 15% of commodity contracts are being delivered, and the fact that in the approved warehouses gold stocks are increasing indicates that deliveries are taking place and will be taking place. Because of the statistics available from the four commodity exchanges, daily statistics about the volume and price of trades, I predict that the heart of the business, the center of the business on gold, will move to the United States from Zurich and from London. We were never able to get from London and from Zurich exact information about the volume of business. Here we know exactly what the volume is at any given time of the day. On the banks, don't think that they are very nasty people. You cannot expect the 14,300 commercial bankers in the United banks in the United States that should be familiar with gold. And when the average American walks up to the counter, that they should be able to service them with gold. How would you expect them to do that after for two generations they were not able to touch gold? We know that in those European countries where gold is permitted and freely tradable, Germany, Switzerland, France, and others, every self-respecting bank trades and deals in gold. But in the United States, it takes education. Today, the average American going to the bank will be discouraged to buy gold. And I can understand that. Our organization is engaged in a major campaign to educate the banks, to educate the bankers how to service the public. And we hope that we will be successful. There are not more than 50 or maybe 100 banks out of the 14,700 who can and know how to trade in gold, how to service the public. I know that what I had to say might prompt you a number of questions, and we have no time for questions. I would like to mention that two great friends of mine are here with me. Mr. Otto Rothenmund, Vice Chairman of the Board of the Foreign Commerce Bank, Zurich and Geneva, and the manager of the Geneva branch, Mr. Perusset. And they have their own suites, Rothenmund 760, Perusset 1076, and they are available for questions which you might have concerning gold in Europe or in America, and they are at your disposal. They will have their seminar or discussion session tomorrow, no, Sunday. And you see it in your program. I have been introduced yesterday to a group of speakers being the president of the Foreign Commerce Bank in Switzerland, which is not true. I'm only a shareholder. We are running short of time, and I enjoy usually these talks because I get questions, and through the questions I learn more than I can give you. Well, it's no time. I know that my good friend, Dr. Bailey, has a very interesting presentation. And the 2 or 3 minutes which remains from my time, I would like to turn over to you to make better use of it than I can. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Deek. We will move along. Mr. Mueller, my apologies for not taking your question to Mr. Deek, but he would be glad to answer that. Why don't you approach him after the meeting?
Please stop your machine and turn your cassette over to side 2.